RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the January 2nd edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. The calendar has turned over to 2019, and we have, boy, got a lot of things to discuss here on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, we'll take a look back at everything that happened last weekend, UFC 232, the PFL Championships, which took place on Monday night. Also, Ryzen had a card. Plus, I'm going to have interviews with Alex Hernandez and Henry Corrales. Daniel, how the hell you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing quite well. I spent the New Year's sleeping in bed like an adult should, although lots of fireworks and whatnot. Jason, I mean, do you enjoy the new New Year's tradition of watching Pro Fight League, watching all their championship fights? Is that a new thing for you?
It was a good way to pass the time. You know, my wife's big thing is staying up till midnight on New Year's Eve, and this was one of the years where I didn't have to work a game the next morning, so it was kind of nice. And you know, card got off to a great start with Lewis Taylor. You know, when you have six fights scheduled for 25 minutes, the fight card can last a little while. But I thought it was an enjoyable night of fights.
Yeah, I thought it was too. Yeah, the Lewis Taylor fight was the best part because it only lasted half a minute. I mean, then we had back-to-back five-round fights. This was a hard watch at first. I was like, oh my gosh. But overall, I mean, every fight was important, right? Every fight mattered. Every fight except for the Kayla Harrison Bauer championship contest. And, you know, some were more interesting than others. You mentioned it yesterday, and the Vinny Magalhaes flopping in the third round, that was, you mentioned it, straight like Manu Ginobili, and that's insane. I mean, I get it, he was really tired, but to let Sean O'Connell just take that $1 million after kind of stopping the fight after the third round is just, that's an $1 million decision.
Yeah, no, I'll mention this. I had this tweet after the Kayla Harrison fight. I said, that was exactly what we expected from Kayla Harrison. Going to be interesting to see what kind of lightweight feel PFL can put up against her in 2009. Dale, I want to get your reaction to a comment I got on social media to my tweet. Mm-hmm. Quote, she could beat Amanda Nunes today.
Okay. Amanda Nunes. No, whoever tweeted you that must be Kayla Harrison's manager, because that's insane. I mean, Amanda Nunes literally, she is the story of the weekend, and the weekend saw John Jones's return, and the weekend saw John Jones move an event from Nevada to California. I mean, he didn't actually do it, but this was the craziest story of the week. And based on what happened on Saturday, the story of the week is Amanda Nunes. Amanda Nunes went out and destroyed Cyborg. Granted, this was a very short contest, and it was back and forth for the short amount of time. So maybe if we do see a rematch, it's going to play out differently as the bout extends, but it doesn't get more dominant than a first-round finish. And Amanda Nunes just knocked off the queen of women's mixed martial arts in Cyborg, and that means she now has the crown. So on a weekend in which Amanda Nunes 100% certified herself as the best female fighter of all time, to read a tweet saying Kayla Harrison, who just beat Jane Jamoke, you know, is going to beat Amanda Nunes, is like, no. Even if the fight happened at lightweight and Nunes was 145, I think still would pick Amanda Nunes to light her up. Because the thing is, man, I was wrong about the physical strength being a major advantage for Cyborg. When I was watching that fight, it did not seem like Nunes was that much smaller, like, strength-wise than Cyborg.
No. I mean, one of the things is, right before that fight started, I just had this I had this gut feeling. I'm like, Nunes is going to pull it off. And, you know, the thing about it, like, and UFC had this tweet after the fact of you know, showing kind of the highlights of the barrage of punches. They said haymakers. And I'm like, it's not really haymakers, because when you go back and you watch the 51 seconds it was, is the fact of the pinpoint accuracy that Amanda Nunes landed. I mean, clearly, you know, her game plan was, I'm going to get straight in the face of Chris Cyborg, and I'm going to bring the fight to her. And just, And I know that there's some people who want to debate this, but how can you not debate right now that Amanda Nunes is the greatest women's fighter of all time? I don't know. When you look at her resume, and one person, you know, commented to me, said, well, I like to see a longer winning streak. Okay, I get that when you look at what Chris Cyborg has done throughout her career. But I think that you look at if you compare resumes between Chris Cyborg and Amanda Nunes, Amanda Nunes's resume is better.
You take away the win over Cyborg, it's better. She's faced better competition, and that's 100% due to the fact that Chris Cyborg didn't fight at 135. I mean, the 145-pound division in which Chris Cyborg built her legacy just straight up sucks. But she's still, based on her legacy and based on how long Cyborg has been doing it, Cyborg established herself as the GOAT. I mean, there was a point in time when Ronda Rousey obviously made the argument. There was a point in time when Joanna Jędrzejczyk obviously made the argument. But both those cases faltered. You know, Amanda Nunes was the reason why Ronda Rousey's case faltered. And so really the only fighter you would argue that Nunes is not better than in terms of the all-time rankings is the fighter she just beat in 51 seconds. So at that point, with the win over Cyborg and also the fact that she went up to featherweight to fighter, and also the fact that her resume before is a bit more impressive than Cyborg in terms of talent level, unequivocally, Amanda Nunes is the best fighter of all time. Not the most marketable fighter, but a fighter who has a huge win over Ronda Rousey, a huge win over Chris Cyborg. In the history of women's MMA, you can't pick two more impressive wins, two more notable victories than those two. And I mean, so much of fighting Cyborg, Jason, is you lose the fight before you even get inside the cage. You kind of respect or you fear the mystique of Chris Cyborg that she's built up over time. I mean, this is a fighter who has just been lethal and savage, and just she has used her size to destroy people, her striking to destroy people, and they kind of show too much fear or too much respect to her. They don't, like you said, take the fight. Nunes took the fight to her. Nunes was confident in her stand-up skills and her technique and her power, and it showed when she was there standing and training her Cyborg, constantly moving forward, and it led her to, I think, unequivocally being the best female fighter of all time.
And let me say this. Mad props to Chris Cyborg for showing up at the post-fight press conference to talk to the media, because they're for a lot of fighters, they just would not do that. You know, she did complain that she wished she could have, you know, talked to her fans in the cage. But I think what you've really seen with the UFC, you know, after some situations where they've put a fighter just got knocked out on the microphone, I think you have seen the UFC said, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to put a fighter who just got knocked out, you know, in on that microphone, because, you know, you just don't know how they're going to sound, what you want to do. But mad props for Chris Cyborg to do that. And who knows? I mean, you know, You buy or sell, that's the last women's 145-pound fight we see in the UFC.
I sell it because I think we're going to see a rematch, Jason.
I see, and you know, people said, oh, why should it be a rematch? If Joanna Jędrzejczyk got a rematch against Rose Namajunas, how does Chris Cyborg not get a rematch?
Yeah, how does
now,
Chris Cyborg?
Now, the caveat to that is Chris Cyborg wanted to play this thing out in free agency. Your contract's up in March. She's got a major decision to make. And, you know, I think the question, if you're Chris Cyborg, is do you want to play free agency? Do you maybe want to see what Bellator offer? Maybe do you want to see what PFL would offer? Maybe you look at if PFL is willing to. I don't think $1 million total prize is going to get Chris Cyborg to PFL, because I think that she could probably make $1 million in one fight in the UFC as opposed to, you know, fighting five times to get that $1 million in the PFL. But it would be interesting maybe if she looks at that route. But I have to imagine from the competitor aspect of Chris Cyborg that she probably wants to get that rematch, even if it means she's got to sign a new contract with the UFC.
I think you think the UFC doesn't do a rematch if they don't sign her to a new deal?
No. I think they would require her to sign a new contract. I mean, look, she played herself into this. You know, I mean, you gambled and she lost.
Yeah. I mean, it is a lot to gamble if you're the UFC to put her in this fight with just one fight on her contract. So you're probably right. I mean, you don't want to have Cyborg win this fight, the rematch against Nunes, and become a free agent. That when you control all the cards, I guess it's willing to sacrifice that fight in order to get the contract extension, because it's like the biggest possible fight for Nunez moving forward is the rematch. There aren't a whole lot of challengers. I mean, when you're looking at, like, for Amanda Nunez, what fights pop off for, you know, these potentially could be money fights? I mean, there's not a lot. I think at some point Amanda Nunez is going to fight Holly Holm. That would be a decent fight in terms of, you know, marketability and whatnot. But in terms of marketability, the biggest fight is Nunez Cyborg 2. And it's not even, like, going to be a huge fight after what we just saw. But it just – it's like when you look at expected business, it's Cyborg Nunez 2, and then there's a big gap in everything else. So that's why I think if you're the UFC, you want to make that fight. But, yeah, I mean, you talk about having a bargaining advantage. If they don't sign a deal and Chris Cyborg fights out her deal and gets a win over Amanda Nunez, I mean, she's going to have a lot of options, and she probably won't re-sign with the UFC unless they give her the whole bank and then another bank. I think Chris Cyborg probably leaves the UFC, though. I really do. And I think the reason being is there is a lot of money outside the UFC right now. Or not a lot, but there's a lot more than there has been in the past.
Yeah.
And Chris Cyborg is definitely the type of fighter that matters in terms of moving numbers somewhat. I mean, over the past couple of years, she's been a top 10 star in terms of buy rate for the UFC, maybe even higher, like top 6. So if you're 1FC or whatever, I think you definitely want to throw the book at her. So that's why I kind of think like Chris Cyborg, who obviously hasn't had the warmest relationship with the UFC, probably might even either have her last fight or just let her contract expire. But that's kind of why I'm a bit skeptical that we'll see Cyborg Nunez. That's where you could buy the argument that we just saw the last ever women's featherweight fight.
I'm interested to see if the UFC goes all in on promoting Amanda Nunez. And I know that a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's on the fighter. But the UFC has always been about the UFC. They haven't necessarily always been about promoting the fighter. And I think that it just would be interesting kind of if they go all in telling the story, especially with that ESPN marketing machine and the fact of, you know, if Ari Emanuel wants to get one of his fighters on a show like an Ellen, he can get him on Ellen. I mean, there's no question about it. So to me, that's the interesting part is, do we see the UFC go all in terms of promoting the story? But of course, you know, the other big story, UFC 232, was John Jones. You know, not really surprised he went out there and won the way he did. You know, I tweeted this after the fight was over. I said, John Jones once again showed why he's the best light heavyweight. However, he has to prove he's a clean fighter. And after, you know, of course, we did the show last week where we talked a lot about this. And of course, after we did that show, more and more things came out. And I'm at the point now, Daniel, I don't know who to believe. I really don't. I feel like USADA and the UFC misled the California State Athletic Commission. Maybe I'm wrong in this, but this is just my perception. I feel like they misled Andy Foster going back to beginning of December when they had that hearing to grant John Jones a license in California. I don't think we'll ever really know whether scientifically we can prove whether or not John Jones was on a performance-enhancing drug, but if he ended that, I don't know who to believe anymore.
Yeah, this whole case is awful. And it's something where we should definitely keep on poking at it, because there's two flip sides here. Like, one flip side is it's not a big deal. It's been the same thing in his system since his original ingestion. The other big deal is John Jones cheated again, and he completely won a 10-8 round over all the institutions that are supposed to protect fighters. I mean, it's one or the other. He either took some new stuff to cheat or he didn't. And if he didn't, and it's hard for anyone to, I think, say one or the other did happen. And if he did the latter, Jason, I mean, talk about an embarrassing story for MMA. I mean, it's such a tough deal that all these commissions have to do. And the reason that it makes it tough is they have two motivations. They have a motivation, I think, to regulate the sport. They have motivation to make money for their state. And when you bring in big events, that's a success. But when it's coupled with dealing with these incredibly complex situations with very complex science and not getting all the information, there is so much room for error. So, I mean, this is a thing that really needs to be examined. because, again, we are talking about so many people bending over backwards for John Jones. We moved the entire event from Nevada to California. It's insane. So, yeah, it just nuts, Jason. And to make matters – I mean, the thing is, John Jones is going to get drug tested a lot because he's going to be in a big fight next after what we saw against Alexander Gustafsson. I mean, this fight wasn't close. I know Gustafsson pulled his groin, but, I mean, John Jones just – I mean, rounds one and two weren't the most entertaining rounds, but John Jones is the better striker. Gustafsson couldn't do anything, and then the third round just took him down and demolished him.
Yeah, there was never, and I was at a house party watching these fights, and I can tell you that pretty much outside of probably two or three people, the rest of the people there were at best casual MMA fans. Some of them weren't even casual MMA fans. The biggest question I kept getting before the fight was, hey, Should I lay it's -300 on John Jones. Should I lay this money? And I'm like, well, I thought Jones was going to win by submission. And I was like, hey, if you can find a prop bet, you know, by submission, that's the one I would take. But it's always fascinating to me to kind of watch fights with people who are not quote unquote in the MMA bubble. And I mean, look, drug testing never comes up. In that audience, they just don't care. It is always kind of funny, and I saw someone note this while watching Ryzen, the fact of how the MMA media looks at Ryzen in comparisons to the UFC in terms of drug testing, which I think it's a broad picture to paint, but there definitely is people will definitely look at Ryzen a lot different than they look at the UFC, and you're right, John Jones is going to be in a major fight in his next fight, whether it's Daniel Cormier or who else it might be. I think I'm pretty safe to say it's not going to be Corey Anderson. I think Corey Anderson has done a good job of trying to talk himself into this fight, but I can tell you, no one after about the first round of that fight, no one was paying attention anymore.
Yeah, Corey Anderson. I mean, I know you're becoming professional. You know, your nickname is now Overtime instead of Beastin 25-8 or whatever. But that fight, Latifi. Hey, he got the win. Latifi was a tough opponent. You know, Corey Anderson was an underdog, and he's moving up the ranks. But that fight itself, incredibly, incredibly lackluster. So I mean, it's John Jones or Daniel Cormier. I mean, John Jones is going to be the villain, the perfect villain. It's going to be one of the biggest fights in the history of this sport when John Jones takes on Daniel Cormier. I mean, the hate is there. The skill level is there. I mean, I picked Alexander Gustafsson to beat John Jones. That looked like a dumb pick after watching the fight because John Jones looked like the vastly superior fight. I mean, that dude just controlled the space with his kicks early on. And then again, once the fight was brought down to the ground, Gustafsson had no control. So it's like the perfect mix of, oh my gosh, this is a great fight in terms of, like, I can't wait to see it happen. You know, John Jones is going to get drug tested a lot, so maybe he'll be cleaner. Daniel Cormier continues to improve as he gets into his old age. I mean, this guy is out there putting at the retirement home and then getting back into training, and he's looking better and better, man. He's a heavyweight champion, and the story itself is beautiful. Jason, I think when you look at the history of the UFC, this Daniel Cormier-John Jones story between these two guys is quite honestly like one of the greatest stories this promotion has ever told.
Look, Dana White has to do whatever he can to make that fight happen. He has to. I mean, and you know, I found it interesting, before and after the fight that John Jones was like, yeah, fighting Cormier at heavyweight really doesn't interest me. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I totally was not expecting you to say that. If I'm Daniel Cormier, do I want to cut all the way back down to 205 pounds? Man, I don't know. But I think I firmly believe that the competitor in Daniel Cormier wants to fight John Jones one more time. You know, after everything that has happened, I still think that that's a fight that he wants. Whether we see that fight next or not, only time is going to tell. You know, I know Cormier has mentioned that if the Brock fight does not ultimately happen, that he's really interested in giving Stipe Miocic a rematch. So let's just say John Jones's next fight is not against Daniel Cormier. Looking at the UFC rankings, you almost got to think it's got to be Anthony Smith.
Yeah, they're going back and forth on Twitter. And I mean, looking at the rankings, I mean, Anthony Smith is the choice. There is no other choice, to be honest with you. And it's like when you compare him with Jan Błachowicz, Volkan Ozdemir, Corey Anderson, the guys that litter the rest of the top 10, Anthony Smith's the most exciting option.
Yeah.
But by gosh, when DC retires, when John Jones decides that he fails one more drug test, this division is bad. I mean, Corey Anderson's going to be light heavyweight champion. I mean, this is a Jason. This is top 10 in the UFC light heavyweight division. This is bad. Shogun Hua is going to win the title again.
It needs an infusion of talent.
Yeah, I don't know where it's coming from. I mean, this division is almost like it might die bad, but it'll be fine. I mean, it's a hallmark division of the UFC.
Look, this is why I say, Chris Weidman, stop cutting weight. Go up to 205.
Yeah, man. When Paulo Costa is the number 7 guy in your division, maybe you should come up way where you don't even have a number 7 guy, apparently. I'm not sure actually how this happens. Oh, Corey Anderson and Thiago Santos are tied for 6. So that makes sense.
Luke Rockhold has pretty much made it kind of clear he's going to move up to 205 here in the very near future. I mean, 205 is just – and this has been a problem the UFC's had for multiple years. I mean, it wasn't long ago that we thought Misha Cirkunov was going to be kind of that next infusion of talent, but that just hasn't worked out. But, yeah, I mean, to me, you tell me the one MMA fight I want to see in 2019 is John Jones, Daniel Cormier. Look, I want to see Conor fight just because it's – you know, it's going to be a big fight week. But in terms of what interests me the most, it is Jones-Cormier, and there's not even a close second.
Oh, yeah, there isn't a close second. It's Cormier, it's Jones, and it's also – like the UFC is going to be defined by, you know, 3 fights. It's going to be the Cormier-Jones fight, the Conor McGregor fight, and, you know, the Nurmagomedov fight, you know, whoever he fights. You know, I wonder who McGregor is going to fight the more I think about it, because, like, I do wonder – how big of a fight Nurmagomedov versus Ferguson would be in terms of buy rates. But, yeah, I can't wait. And just to go back to the thing you mentioned, it is funny to watch to talk about drug testing so much and then watch Ryzen and go gaga over it. I mean, Gabby Garcia failed a drug test and he didn't even have to test her. You know, you just got to look at her. I mean, I don't like to say that, but Jesus Christ. I mean, holy hell. Like, just Google her name, you know. She's a spectacle for sure. I mean, she's out here fighting grandmothers. But again, I think the reason why is, like, the UFC is like our child, right? We hold our child to standard. We want our child to not develop, you know, like not to have 7 kids by age 17. We want our child to go to college. Ryzen's like that cool kid our child hangs out with at school, right? Like, he has a mohawk and he's into heavy metal, and we wouldn't want him to be our child, but we see him once a year and we think he's kind of cool. That's kind of how I would equate the 2 promotions.
Look, I'll go back to Conor. I'll give you my top 4 fights I want to see for Conor McGregor next, and let me see kind of where your thoughts are. Number 1, Justin Gaethje. Number 2, Edson Barboza. 3, Ally Quinta. 4, Anthony Pettis.
God, I love those so much.
Please, I know Dana's talking about this rematching Conor and Khabib. No, let's build up to that. First off, give me Khabib Ferguson. That would be my number 2 fight I want to see in 2019 behind Jones Cormier.
Yeah, that would absolutely be it, man.
Because I will tell you, if that fight would have happened a year ago, my pick would have been Tony Ferguson. Now, man, hard to pick against Khabib.
It absolutely is. I mean, that fight is just tremendous. And that's like the one good thing. If you give McGregor, all those fights sounded wonderful. You know, if you give McGregor Gaethje, allow him to rebuild his stock, and that fight will surely do big numbers on pay-per-view, you do finally get that Khabib Ferguson fight out of your system. You know it's a great fight because we want to make it again. I mean, I love all those fights. If I'm the UFC, though, there's only one fight I'm trying to do. Well, there's several fights I'm trying to do. But one I'm still targeting, Jason, is look, I'm thinking about going big or going home. I think Conor McGregor versus George St. Pierre, you put those 2 names on a pay-per-view bill, you're breaking records.
I don't think GSP ever fights again.
I think he does, man. I mean, he's just out here on, you know, hanging out with Ariel Helwani. You know, his name's always on the radar. I think with George, I don't know how big of a motivation money is, but it doesn't get much bigger than Conor McGregor.
I mean, if it's about money, step into the cage with Connor. You're going to make a crap ton of money.
Yeah, he spent – I mean, George St. Pierre's whole career has been like, do the super fight with Anderson. Do the super fight with Anderson. And he never did. And this is his last opportunity in his career to pull the trigger. And he could talk himself into thinking he's going to beat Connor. I mean, it's not hard if you're a fan of George St. Pierre. So, yeah, we got that. And I guess the other big fight of the year is whenever the hell Brock Lesnar comes, if he ever does. But, I mean, maybe he just likes, you know, the whole fake wrestling thing, which I love wrestling, but it's fake. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it seems like everything's gone really quiet on that. In terms of the rest of UFC 232, some of the things that really stuck out to me, Alexander Volkanovski, the TKO against Chad Mendes, making himself a clear top contender at 145 pounds. You know, Peter Yan in another victory, corner stoppage against Douglas Silva. De Andrade, Nathaniel Wood on the prelims sucks out to me. Uriah Hall, who looked like first two rounds, he just was not interested, and then gets that knockout against Bavon Lewis, really sticks out to me. And then, you know, obviously a sad moment, BJ Penn. And I thought BJ was looking good early on, and man, boom, and then just Ryan Hall doing what Ryan Hall does.
Yeah. BJ Penn fights for 2 minutes, and we're like, man, that first 60 seconds, the old BJ was back, baby. I mean, he's fighting a grappler, you know. Like, yeah, he can shadow box Ryan Hall, you know. I mean, look, he looked fine, but just for tired man.
To me, there's only one reason BJ Penn gets one more fight in the UFC.
What reason? What reason?
They're doing a show in Hawaii headlined by Max Holloway, and you got to put BJ on the card. To me, that is the only reason BJ Penn should fight again.
And you put him against Mike Jackson. I think that's the only thing you can do. I think that's the one guy he might be able to beat. Put him against CM Punk. Why can't we have BJ Penn versus CM Punk in Hawaii? Make it happen.
Let's just go old school. Let's bring back Takanori Gomi.
No, BJ's probably going to lose that fight. Let's not do that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Takanori Gomi is straight washed, but yeah, I mean, that was sad, but at least – I mean, it was sad watching him limp back to his corner after the heel hook. I thought Ryan Hall was going to be safe with them. Yeah, man, the big star of the non-main event, co-main event situation was undoubtedly Alexander Volkanovski. I mean, he took on Chad Mendes. It was a great fight. Mendes really pushed him in that second frame before he got finished. But, yeah, Volkanovski, I mean, talk about – a breakout, breakthrough performance. That's what it was against Chad Mendes. I mean, other things that stuck out to me, Michael Chiesa, I mean, just a simple win over Carlos Condit, bringing him down again and again and getting the Kimura submission early in the second frame. It's hard to tap out Carlos Condit, but Michael Chiesa did. Man, Kat Zingano's eye, I don't even want to look at it. I mean, God, what a bad way for her to go out against Megan Anderson, moving up into the featherweight division. And you know, it was a head kick for Megan Anderson that sliced her eye, I think, and just a gross way to end that fight. And, you know, Megan Anderson, the great hope of the featherweight division, I guess. Walt Harris, Andrei Arlovsky, I'm just mentioning it because that was, like, the worst fight I've ever seen in my life. I mean, not really, but it was awful. And then what else that you didn't mention? I guess Montel Jackson had a nice little win over Brian Kelleher, Jason. But overall, it was a fun card to watch for sure.
Yeah. Definitely enjoyed it. Of course, we got a couple weeks here before the next UFC event. Of course, that'll be the Brooklyn card for UFC on ESPN Plus One, which, you know, be interested to see that one. And by the way, speaking of that card, well, the feature prelim on ESPN is going to be Alex Hernandez and Donald Cerrone. I had a chance to catch up with Alex Hernandez. Going to let you hear that conversation now. And then following my conversation with Alex Hernandez, you're going to hear my chat with Henry Corrales, who's going to be taking on Aaron Pico at Bellator 214 on January the 26th in California. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be in the feature matchup of the prelims of the UFC's debut on ESPN. It'll be a part of the ESPN card, not the ESPN Plus. Alex Hernandez. Alex, man, I appreciate time, and obviously you get to kick off the new year on ESPN. I mean, growing up, did you ever like think, like, man, I will fight on ESPN one day?
Man, growing up, I thought I'd play basketball, and then I realized I was too short and I sucked, so no, I didn't have too many aspirations of being an athlete at an early age, but this is definitely badass and definitely everything I could have dreamed about as a young adult and coming into the sport, so, I mean, I couldn't be more excited to start the year off like that, and and be on that inaugural card of the ESPN.
I was on your Instagram feed, which anybody wants to follow you at the Great 155. I was watching your video blog you put up that really chronicles how long of a day you have from the first training session all the way to the end. So what is that motivation to every morning to get up out of bed and to do all the training regimens that you're doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm fortunate to be a single guy without kids or, you know, family, really any obligation at all. And so all I have to worry about is myself and my career. And I definitely use youth and vitality to my advantage because I feel like it would just be utter complacency not to. So I get up and I go to work. And it's kind of been like that, having a real job also, you know, kind of the office and juggling my training. I'm used to these, you know, 15-hour days, 12-hour days. When people talk about working for a few hours or training for a couple, I just don't understand what the hell you do with the rest of your day. And so I'm just an eager student of the game. I'm excited to come in. I might not always be the first one there, but I'm always the last when I stay late. And I'm just always staying busy, learning and engaged in the game the whole day. It's just, it's all I have to do and it's all I care to do.
Yeah, as a small business owner, I know exactly how you feel. I mean, you know, people who don't work 12, 15-hour days, like, man, what are you doing? I mean, I totally get it's where you're coming from. One of the things that stuck out to me about the beginning of that video blog you had was you working in the gi. And some fighters say, like working the gi. Some say, nah, I don't like working the gi. Is it, hey, I want to work in the gi, or is it just kind of based on how you're feeling?
No, I think the gi is true jiu-jitsu. You know, that's the true art of Brazilian jiu-jitsu is in the gi. And so I think that you're neglecting a lot of the techniques and the true discipline of the art if you're not utilizing the gi. And I think everything essentially translates over. Obviously, the grips aren't the same, but I've never rolled with a black belt in a gi that's not a killer without one. Inversely, there's plenty of people I've seen no gi who can't handle themselves in a gi. So I think it definitely transcends into MMA however it needs to, and everybody's kind of different how they like to incorporate their game. But I think the gi is paramount. I think it's crucial. And certainly when I'm leading up to the fight, like, you know, now we're only a few weeks out, now I don't worry about the gi at this point. Now if I attend a gi session, I'm the only guy. I show up in no gi, and then I have a few guys just take off their gi tops, and they roll with me specifically. But I think the gi is definitely a crucial piece of the game.
Of course, initially when we heard about your fight in January, it was Francisco Trinaldo, supposed to be on January 26th. Of course, we all know that event's no longer taking place. And now you're taking on Don Cerrone. How kind of all this unfold in your world where you find out that you've got a new opponent in Don Cerrone?
Man, I was so excited, dude. I got an update from my manager, Jason House. One evening, I was finishing up practice in the gym, and you know, I had a couple of text messages, call me ASAP, and I had a FaceTime missed call, which made me a little bit more optimistic that it was FaceTime versus, you know, just a general missed call. And it's either, you know, really good news or bad news when you get that ASAP. And so I called him, and he said that Sean Shelby approached him with this option for us to fight Cerrone instead. And immediately I was just like, fuck yes. You know, of course, you get opportunities like that, you got to seize them. And so without second thought, I accepted that offer, and we moved forward. And, you know, I was thrilled. There's always those couple of days of limbo in between where you're waiting for the deal to close, where you're a little on edge, and the thought of going back to the original fight, no offense to Trinaldo or anything, would have definitely been much more underwhelming after having that kind of dangled in your face, you know.
Do you see a difference between Donald Cerrone fighting at 155 as opposed to 170?
Yeah, you know, not that I bank on it at all, but I can't imagine that not hurting him or being an adverse effect in getting down to 155 again. He's been comfortable at 170 for so long, and he seemed to be pretty confident there. But, you know, I think he just kind of flippantly flows with the wind, you know, kind of switches divisions, trains. I think he's just a little negligent. And the drop to 55, I don't know, may or may not be in his best interest health-wise, I'm not sure, but I don't think it's going to play into his favor, and I know for a fact I'm I'm going to be the stronger, faster, more technical fighter at 55. I'm built for 55. I've managed my weight well there. I'm extremely strong at 55. And so if you have to go out of your way, whether it be an oversized 55 or not, it just won't behoove him, I think, matching up with me at 55. It probably would have been a better fight for him if we just both fought at 170.
I think the term legend would be thrown around with Donald Cerrone just because of how long he's been in the UFC, the records that he has. Do you remember the first time you saw a Donald Cerrone fight?
Man, I can't remember the first one, but yeah, obviously he's been on the scene for like a fucking decade or so. You know, I feel like I was just riding a bicycle and this dude was already inside the octagon. So yeah, he's been in the ring for a while, but that's a lot of wear and tear. And if you haven't done it already, you're not going to do it. This is my time. I'm happy to be eliminating a legend. And with all due respect, completely eliminating a legend. I'm on the rise. I've got every attribute at my advantage and every desire for advancement where I feel like Cerrone's just kind of finding time and killing it. So, you know, it's a pleasure and honor to stand across and hit him in the face, stand across from the cage, but I'm certainly not worried about that at all.
You know, I think when you think about the difference between Trinaldo and Cerrone, where Cerrone, you know, he could do multiple things, where Trinaldo, you always kind of feel like he's a grinder. You know, he's going to grind on you. Do you prefer this type of matchup where, you just know that there's just multiple aspects you got to be ready for?
Yeah, you know, honestly, if you put Trinaldo and Cerrone in a cage, it just depends who showed up. I don't know who would win that fight, to be honest. Like you said, one might show up. Like Cerrone may or may not show up, and when he does, he seems to be a bit dangerous. And when he doesn't, he's not. Trinaldo's a grimy, grinding motherfucker that's going to be a little bulldog no matter what. And so even though he might be elementary in his approach and he's kind of one-dimensional, but he's tough as hell. And he's got real power. And so, you know, there's certain attributes that Trinaldo has that you'd want to prepare for versus Cerrone. I think Trinaldo's a tougher human being. But Cerrone's a bit more dynamic. I still think he's flat. He's extremely flat in respect to me. And he's not nearly as versatile. So really, neither one are overly threatening to me. And I certainly don't think Cerrone's any more of a threat than Trinaldo is. I just think Cerrone's a far better and more respectable name just because he's been around for so long and accomplished so much.
In our previous conversation, you talked about the goal is always go out there, get the stoppage victory. You don't want to go the distance. So I'm guessing that's kind of the main goal here is make sure this fight doesn't go 15 minutes.
You know, I want three checks. I didn't leave with that third check last time and it hurt. You know, I want three checks. I want to go out there. I want to put him away in the first or second round. And I want to do it in exemplary fashion.
Any goals you've set for yourself for 2019?
Just devastating W's. You know, I want to be lined up for a title for 2020 as my that 2020 debut fight. So whatever I need to accomplish, 3 wins, 4 wins, whatever it is this year, but just stack those W's and do so emphatically.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see this fight on the UFC debut on ESPN coming up on January 19th. Of course, main card on ESPN+. Alex, as always, I appreciate time. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you at on social media and those sponsors to help support you.
Yeah, at the Great 155 across all platforms. So, on at Cadden Northeast, Try to Strength and Conditioning, Gates Bakery, Cedric's, Farmer Juice, and Strat Sports Fine. Help you take care of me. I appreciate you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of Bellator 214 on Saturday night, January 26th, Henry Corrales. Henry, appreciate time. When this fight was announced, I was like, hot damn, this is an awesome fight. When you get the phone call to say, hey, Aaron Pico's a fight offer, what went through your mindset?
I was feeling the same way you felt, dude. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I'm just super pumped, dude, ready to go.
Obviously, I think when you think about Aaron Pico, I mean, obviously he's been this prospect. I mean, even before he even actually, made the decision to go to MMA, everyone kept talking about it. And I think the body shot is a thing we see with him. For you, what besides, you know, what he's done with those body shots, what sticks out to you about him?
I think everything, dude. He's good. He's legit, you know. I think all his hype is justifiable, and we haven't taken preparations lightly for this guy. So we're putting in all the necessary work, dude. We're definitely in it to win it.
Do you feel like people are sleeping on you in this fight?
Yeah, man, that's a weird thing to get caught up in, how people feel about you, you know. I don't give a fuck, dude.
I mean, do you at all feel like that, you know, people view you as the underdog? Does that fuel you?
Yeah, dude, I've been viewed at a lot worse by people, so underdog, that's kind of cool. So whatever.
Obviously, we're just under a month out from this fight, man. What's preparations like for this one in comparison to say your other fights?
You know, the deeper I get in this game, you know, it's everything's just taken more serious, dude, and everything just always just striving to better myself in all aspects. So everything's just elevated, man. Especially it's a bigger stage, you know. So I'm pretty excited.
Do you ever think you'd be fighting on a card with Fedor Emelianenko?
I just fought on the same card as him in October, so this would be the second time. I definitely didn't think I was going to fight on a card with him twice, so that's pretty cool.
Wait, is it kind of nostalgic for you to, you know, I mean, obviously, anyone who's been around MMA for a long time, Fedor, everyone knows who he is. I mean, for you, was it like being around him where you're like, wow, this is MMA royalty?
Yeah, that, and then, you know, Benson Henderson desensitized me to that, being around legends, you know, because that dude is, he's a high-quality man, you know, inside and outside, mostly outside the cage, too. You know, he's a family man, he's super legit in all aspects of life, like, Benson's the man, dude.
Remember last time we talked, you were talking about the story where he helped change your tire when you had just moved out to the MMA lab. I mean, any new kind of interesting interactions the fans would love to hear about you and Benson?
Not so much, dude. He does all the little things, man. You know, he does all the little things, you know, he's just a good dude. So he's a cool guy to be around.
Of course, it's the holiday season. You're still getting in that sparring. As we're talking, it's New Year's Eve, and of course, you were just getting a training session in. I mean, were you able to enjoy the holidays at all in preparations for this one?
Dude, you know what? You know, my thing is like, I got into this game when I was like 24 years old, and so I've already partied, dude. I've already celebrated so many different types of holidays. I've already done it, dude. So. I don't mind, you know, missing out on some Christmas food, you know. I still see my people and stuff. So, and you know, the fight's January 26th. So after that, you know what I mean, we'll get back at it.
And this late January date for you in the form is kind of becoming an annual tradition. Ooh, for you. Third time, obviously you're from Cali. I mean, you know, for you, I mean, is it just kind of one of those, you know, like that is your Christmas, you know, that last Saturday of January? Hey man, I know I'm going to be in the form fighting.
Hell yeah, dude. There's nothing like fighting in front of some familiar faces, dude. And it's like, dude, this shit's not getting old. This is the third year in a row, and I'm like more pumped than the first time I fought there, because I've had some good nights there. So, yeah, we're gonna get after it, dude.
I mean, Aaron doesn't have the experience of other guys that you have fought. I mean, and obviously we know you fought the who's who in Bellator. I mean, but do you kind of feel like this is the fight that ultimately is going to propel you into that title shot?
I think so, you know. I think so. This will be five straight, so, you know, there's no denying that, man.
I mean, and we've talked about it. I mean, ever since you made that move out to MMA Lab, everything has completely changed for you. You haven't lost with the full camp, you know, because you took so many of those short-notice fights. I mean, do you start to kind of look at that 145-pound division and say, okay, you know what, this fight gets me here, this fight gets me there? I mean, are you kind of at that point now?
Yeah, you know, just chipping away, dude, and showing up, you know, showing up to training every single day. And yeah, man, this guy wants to say hi, jumping all over me.
So what's your cat's name?
That's Peppers. Peppers.
How long have you had him?
I've had this guy for a couple months now. He's cool. He's low maintenance, dude. I rarely see him, and he's an inside cat, so that's pretty cool.
I know we've always talked about you tend to read books, you know, while you're training. Anything in this camp that's kind of got your mind off the fight game?
Right now I'm reading The Power of the Subconscious Mind, which is pretty cool. Interesting read. A little classic. I got some Bukowski coming up here, some nonfiction, so staying busy with the reading while I'm resting, trying to kill two birds with one stone.
I mean, as you think about the fight with Aaron, I mean, is there anything you point to say, I know I have to do this to get the victory?
You know what, dude? To be honest with you, it's the same approach with every single guy. You know what I mean? I got to make sure I fucking hold up my end of the bargain and I bring my best self to the table. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what I'm focused on. You know, we've watched tape. Yeah, we know what he's done. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, it's like, homie, you got to show up and you got to bring the fucking heat, you know? And in order for me to show up and bring the heat, I got to train every single day, a couple times a day. I got to eat the clean food. I got to read, you know, just super basic, simple life, you know, that a lot of people don't see about the fight game. You know, this shit's not very, it's not extravagant. It's not like, you know, it's not like other type of professional athletes. At least it isn't for me, you know. It's just simple, man.
I've talked to Aaron in the past, and one of the things we've talked about is his superstitions. And one of the things he says, he never will step on a red line. That's just like his thing. He won't step on it. Do you have any superstitions? Like on fight day, you're like, I can't do this or I got to do this?
No, not so much, dude. Yeah, not really.
But the thing with Aaron is we've seen the knockout power he's had. And we all know his wrestling credentials, but we haven't seen it in MMA. Is that surprising to you?
No, I think I've seen some tape of him going for some takedowns and stuff. Yeah.
But there's not much of it. He's primarily relied on striking. I mean, is that kind of what you expect out of him? Or is it kind of like, hey, I think once he kind of sees what I can do in my stand-up, that he's going to go back to his wrestling roots?
Yeah. Well, the guy's a wrestler, you know. He's a good wrestler, great wrestler, you know. And he also throws hands, too. So we're expecting him to go for takedowns, for sure.
And of course, it's all January 26th, live on the Paramount Network, DAZN, where you can catch these fights. It's great for me now that I cut the cord. I have YouTube TV to watch these fights on DAZN. For you, is that become kind of a tool for you with DAZN? Because all the fights are now there and really allows you to go back on your own fights and other fights to kind of dissect things?
Oh, man, I don't even have the app or whatever. I don't even have TV, dude. I don't even watch TV, so I go on YouTube for fights and stuff.
Is there any type of fights that you like to go out and watch? Like you know what? It doesn't matter what the promotion is. Something?
I watched that Cyborg fight, dude. That was crazy, man. That was a wild fight, the John Jones fight. Yeah, I watch the fights for sure. You know, I like to get together with my buds and watch some fights, eat some food.
I'd say it was before that Cyborg fight. Like, I just had this gut feeling. And you know what the thing about that fight was? You know, people are like, oh, man, look at him throwing down. But I'm like, not though it was Nunez throwing down, but the accuracy that she was landing to me was what stuck out to me.
Yeah, she was super long, you know, and Cyborg was just super reckless, you know, and didn't really respect her power. And that's the game.
I mean, she goes up, and that's kind of been the talk about it, is fighters maybe more going up in weight. You know, maybe trying to get advantage of not being the fighter that's lost, you know, X amount of pounds. I mean, have you ever thought about maybe, you know what, an opportunity comes up, maybe I go up to, you know, up in weight?
Not so much, dude. I'm pretty light, you know. I'm like 160, 59, so I kind of like being a featherweight.
And, of course, as I mentioned, all goes down January the 26th, Bellator 214. Henry, man, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know they can find you on social media and all those sponsors that help support you.
Hell yeah, dude. Thanks for having me. You can go mainly on Henry Krause MMA on Instagram. That's where you can find me.
And there was my conversations with Alex Hernandez and Henry Corrales. Appreciate both those guys taking some time out this week to talk to me about their upcoming fights. And I tell you what, I'm really interested to kind of see how the UFC grows as we now hit to the ESPN version of the UFC and kind of where this sport goes. But I've been asking a lot of people about this, Dale. I'll get your thoughts. Everyone I talk to, it doesn't seem like anyone really cares for Cejudo Dillashaw.
What are they saying about the fight?
They're just like, it's a fight that's like, it doesn't make me want to sit at home and get an ESPN Plus subscription immediately.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I could see that. I mean, it is crazy that, I don't know, man. It's just crazy. It's just weird. Because when I think of, like, I know they want to get people to subscribe to ESPN Plus, but it's weird they're going to put, like, fights on ESPN, and they're going to put the big fights on the internet.
This is my thing about that card is I understand why they made this decision, but why is there not someone in the UFC going, maybe we shouldn't have Greg Hardy in the co-main event of our ESPN debut?
I know, over Paige VanZant and Richard Ostovich. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, the only thing that I'm surprised is Joseph Benavidez isn't on the early prelims. You know that guy's on the dog count. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you can't ask for a better main event than Donald Cerrone.
It's a great main event. In terms of that card, Gregor Gillespie, even though I think that is a awful matchup for Yancy Medeiros. Awful matchup. I mean,
yeah, awful
like,
matchup.
Like, here's a question. If you were going to set an over-under on amount of takedowns Gregor Gillespie gets, if I set the number at 6,
yeah,
you going under or over?
It might just be under because he's just going to keep him down. He might just keep him down. I mean, Yancey's good at scrambling, so it might be over.
That is an awful stylistic matchup for Medeiros. Awful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to the card. I get it, though. Cejudo Dillashaw isn't a... It doesn't pop, and it should, right? Like, Dillashaw's the bantamweight champion. He's going down to flyweight. This may be the reason why the division is dying. But I don't know. Here's a storybook story, Jason. Are you ready for it? It's Thursday. TJ Dillashaw gets the sniffles, and he gets sick, and he pulls out. And Joseph Benavidez steps up. He fights for the flyweight title. He wins it, and the division is over. I mean, wouldn't that be what Hallmark movies are made of?
Look, I look at this, and while the UFC, it's kind of amazing how they just don't want to talk about this, but clearly they're done with the flyweights. I mean, clearly.
Yeah, it's like the weirdest breakup of all time. It's like they broke up with a girl, but they didn't tell the girl.
Yeah, it's like they just don't a guy like Benavidez, he can fight at 35. I mean, there's some guys you look at that are no longer in the UFC that you kind of go, there's just no way they would succeed at 35. They're just not big enough.
Yeah.
But man, it's just, I mean, what happens if Cejudo and Dillashaw both don't make it to the fight night? Are we talking about Greg Hardy headlining?
Oh my gosh, no way. Right? Like, no way. You can't do that, right? Like, that'd be bad.
I wonder, I don't know the answer to this. It's just purely, and the listeners of this podcast can hit us up on social media and let us know your thoughts. But I just wonder, are there people who are going to avoid this card because they don't want to support Greg Hardy?
There are people that are going to tweet about it. I mean,
but the question is the people who tweet about it,
no.
Will they ultimately end up watching regardless?
Yeah, most of them.
I mean, like, it's very clearly on that night, Alan Crowder will be the biggest fan favorite.
Mm. And it's bad, man. I mean, this whole situation's bad. It, like, picks up the worst of the internet. Like, it really does. I mean, Greg Hardy is awful. I don't like him.
I'm telling you this right now. Greg Hardy will be a massive betting favorite in that fight.
Oh, yeah. He's a great fighter. He's a pretty good fighter. I mean, a lot of potential.
Okay, right now, like, I just pulled it up. He's minus 550. I bet by the time the fight gets here, he's at least an 8-1 favorite.
I think so. I mean, I think if you're a casual fan and you look at the betting odds, you're either going to bet against him or bet for him. You know, I mean, that's a
At the end of the day, Alan Crowder is, you know, he's a low end UFC heavyweight.
Yeah,
that's what he is. Yeah. But you know, I will not now. The reason I will not be watching these fights live because I'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee for the Valor Fighting Challenge show. But you know, I mean, I'm interested after the fact to go back and watch this. I mean, look, I'll be an ESPN Plus subscriber. You know, obviously for the UFC content, but just as a sports fan, if you really notice, they're putting more and more things on the ESPN Plus platform. You know, there were, and it's, you know, $4.99 a month. Now, the question ultimately is going to be is, you know, is will people keep their UFC Fight Pass subscription? Because, you know, the UFC has now come out and said UFC pay-per-view prelims will be on Fight Pass, but all the other prelims are on ESPN Plus. Now, if you want to watch a bunch of regional MMA, there's a ton of regional MMA that's going to be on UFC Fight Pass, including CS MMA. They've got their first show of the year coming up on January the 19th, which I know a lot of people say, oh, man, they're not on Access TV anymore. But no disrespect to Access TV, UFC Fight Pass is a better platform. It just is. You know, just based on the amount of homes that Access TV is actually in, it's a better platform. And, you know, but for me personally, I don't see myself having a UFC Fight Pass subscription. It's just, I mean, it's not a money thing for me. It's just more of, will I actually turn on the app?
Yeah. I haven't turned on Fight Pass in a very long time. And I'm not going to resubscribe to Fight Pass. I mean, we're moving on. The UFC's moving on. We're moving on. I mean, they got to put all their gears in the ESPN Plus.
If they made it $5 a month, okay. But for the same, but you're telling me I got to pay the same price I was getting to get all the UFC content. That's 3/4 of it is no longer there anymore. Pass.
Yeah, I'm passing, man. I'm passing. I mean, I'm gonna figure out a way to watch the fights that are live on Fight Pass, and then I'll subscribe to ESPN Plus because I mean they got to go gung ho on this. I mean, it's all about driving numbers there to ESPN Plus. I mean, that's why they're putting the Ilya Cejudo fight.
And I think even in terms of prelims, the quality prelims will be on ESPN Plus. They won't be on UFC Fight Pass.
Yeah. You know, we're recently three lane prelims on Fight Pass.
But yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about the next UFC show coming up next week on the show. But of course, on Monday night we had the PFL Championships, PFL 11. Mentioned a little earlier. Did sit down and watch those fights live. Lewis Taylor wins the middleweight tournament, 33-second knockout. Magomed wins a welterweight tournament with stoppage victory over Ray Cooper. I think everyone was rooting for Ray Cooper in that matchup. Sean O'Connell wins the light heavyweight title and then announces his retirement. We talked about that a little bit earlier with Vinny Magalhaes. Philippe Lins wins the heavyweight tournament. Nathan Schultz wins the lightweight title. And then, of course, Kayla Harrison remaining undefeated in that one. Overall, you know, enjoyed the programming. You know, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, when you have, you know, 6 25-minute fights scheduled for 25 minutes, fight card can kind of drag on. But, you know, PFL is one of those promotions that you really hope it succeeds. I saw somebody say to their message to the PFL fighters, go get that check cashed immediately so you make sure it doesn't bounce. I did have this tweet I wanted to mention. It was kind of relation to PFL in a way. It said, feels like MMA media hates Dana so much they want competitor to come around. They completely ignore how PFL and one spending a lot more than making and will eventually he gone as a result. Folks, that's exactly how it read. Not a lot of great punctuation there, but that's exactly how it read. I think I have no haters toward Dana White. But, I mean, look, this is just – if Dana White has treated you wrong, are you going to maybe give him benefit of the doubt? No. But you hope PFL succeeds. But, look, I'm a small business owner. I look at what they're doing. I don't know how they do succeed, Daniel.
Me neither. I don't know how they succeed. I mean,
I don't know if you saw that Forbes article that came out last week from Paul Giff where you know he had you know done all these public requests on ticket sales, and you see the fact of you know comping much more tickets than actually selling, and you know, and they've taken this route of you know we don't bring in local ticket sellers, and I want to see them succeed, but I as I'm watching the fights, I'm going, do you really have to offer $1 million prize? Like, hey, I feel like you could say 500,000, people would say, like, oh man, 500 grand.
Yeah, $1 million is sexy. $1 million is a sexy number. It's way sexier than 500,000, and it's way sexier than 1.2 million. I don't know why. Even though 1.2 is more expensive, $1 million, Jason, that just sounds sexy.
Look, until like, and obviously they are banking on a big television deal. But when you look at the television ratings that they have got on NBCSN, there's no way I see them getting this big television deal they think they're going to get.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to put it frankly, I don't think the PFL will be around in 2 years because I just don't get it. I don't understand how financially they're going to be around with the current incarnation. They could obviously redo their whole business model, but the whole $1 million payouts of the tournaments, the way they promote cards, it's something where they're spending a whole lot of money and not making a whole lot. And the TV product isn't exploding. So that's why I'm really skeptical. Obviously, I want the Pro Fight League to succeed because it's amazing to have options in sports entertainment landscape. And in this fight card, I mean, this idea of tournaments leading to one big night is awesome. I mean, I loved this fight card somewhat. I mean, again, it was a struggle, you know. Magomedov show fight wasn't very fun for me to watch, but I loved watching Sean O'Connell win against Vinny Magalhaes.
That was a fun fight.
Yeah, it was a good story because Vinny was such a big favorite, in my opinion.
It reminded me of old school Bellator with the tournaments, where you were getting invested in the fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a great formula. But it's just, you know, like if I was PFL, I would be trying to get on Fox. That'd be my goal.
Yeah, I mean, again, the platform they're on, it's not like if their product was amazing, it's going to explode. You got to get on one of these channels that people casually watch in big numbers. Yeah, you get on Fox Sports 1, put your product there. More people casually watch that than where they are now. It's like, I think that's absolutely the move, Jason. And I think that's a great suggestion. I'm sure they're looking into it. But, yeah, you know, it was a nice little card. I thought Red Cooper was going to win, but he kind of got outclassed.
He was one of those guys, especially that feature piece they put together with him and his family before the fight. I thought it was a great piece done. And it definitely there were some pieces they did before those fights that, and kudos to the production crew who put those pieces together. They definitely got you invested, you know, in those fighters. And I hope CPFL succeed. Of course, we also had Ryzen, Koji Horiguchi. Defeats Arian Caldwell, guillotine win there for Horiguchi, and now we'll see the rematch, or we expect to see the rematch in Bellator in 2019. Which you know, hey, look, kudos to Arian Caldwell and taking that fight, and also Bellator making that happen. And you know, so that's definitely a fight you're interested to kind of see, and maybe that's really Koji Horiguchi's reintroduction back to the mainstream North American MMA fan.
Yeah, man. I mean, that to me was one of the few fights that mattered. I mean, obviously we saw Floyd Mayweather, you know, destroy tension, but Koji Horiguchi, Darian Caldwell, that fight mattered. That was a great fight. And look, Caldwell got tapped, but you know, we're going to see a rematch and the fight itself was close. I mean, Caldwell was out wrestling Horiguchi throughout it. The stand up, personally, I would say Horiguchi was getting the better of Caldwell, but it was Darian who got stuck in a guillotine choke when he shot him for a takedown, and that was the end of the fight. I think a rematch, Caldwell definitely has a chance of beating Horiguchi. I mean, these are absolutely two of the top premier talents outside of the UFC, and you know, Ryzen was a very long event. I didn't watch all of it because I believe the card lasted like 800 hours. Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, the other name I was looking at was Justin Scoggins, and I mean, he did not win. He took on Yuki Matalia, and he came in and lost with like a weird triangle choke thing. Like it was like a scissor hold. I don't know. It's hard to explain. But yeah, the Ryzen card was crazy. I mean, between Brandon Halsey, he kept on falling out of the ropes throughout his fight. Gabby Garcia destroying another person and like a grandmother attacking her. And then obviously Floyd and Tenshin. It was another chaotic night in Japan as we ring in the new year.
I watched the Floyd fight. I know a lot of people call that, you know, call the fix on that one. I see why people say it. I don't think it was fixed by any way, but it also kind of made you think of how Floyd fought that fight in comparison to how he fought Connor.
Yeah, there was a lot more respect with Connor than with Tenshin. I mean, he destroyed Nasukawa. He does call a 20-year-old kickboxer. I mean, this was a kickboxer jumping into the boxing world. And you could – I mean, this was a completely different Floyd than the one that fought Connor. This was a much more aggressive Floyd.
Oh, that was the easiest payday of his life.
Yeah. I mean, he just went in there and destroyed a guy. Easy. Nasukawa was a good kickboxer. Not a good boxer. Floyd's the best boxer of his generation, and it showed.
Yeah, it just makes you wonder if we're going to see another Floyd versus MMA fighter at some point. I think the likelihood is yes.
Yeah, I think the likelihood is the fact that we saw him fight Tenshin Nasukawa randomly in Japan is yes, that's going to happen again.
Yeah, so that is everything that's happened over the past couple of days in MMA. No MMA this week, which is always kind of a nice thing. So I kind of sit home this weekend, watch a bunch of NFL football. Looking forward to that. The first weekend off, we'll see if my wife makes me do some things around the house or not. So that's pretty much be my weekend of two things around the house and watch some football. But we will definitely be back next Wednesday for another edition of the MMA Report podcast. Also coming up here, if you listen to this on Wednesday, January 2nd, coming up here later today on the MMA, Report and RadioInfluence.com, we'll have a special edition of the MMA Insiders podcast, myself and Sam Kaplan, as we're going to talk about our top 10 MMA stories of 2018. So be sure to check that out. I'll have links up on my social media, which is at Jason_Floyd. Of course, you can follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Gavon DGG. So this has been this episode of the MMA Report podcast, which you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'll say this. If we have blowouts in the semifinal games, and I'm going to get to those here in a second, and we have Georgia blown out Texas, you know what the narrative is going to be. It's going to be, hey, you got the wrong teams in. Particularly, let's forget about Notre Dame. If Alabama decisively beats Oklahoma and Georgia decisively beats Texas, we've already seen Georgia and Alabama. We know that Georgia can hang with Alabama. If Oklahoma cannot do so, you know what the narrative is going to be. Yeah, you put four teams in, but you didn't pick the four best. You picked the four most deserving. You aligned it the way you wanted to politically, but you didn't pick the four best teams. You know that's what the narrative is going to be. Whether you agree with it or not, that's what people are going to say. If that happens.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.